honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. What a journey we have been on today with 104-year-old Monica Kinneman of Colorado Springs, Colorado, a veteran of the British Army during World War II. Her brother Derek was a prisoner of war with a miraculous story of survival. Her sister was an espionage in the Middle East during the war, as she told us. Even her father, deep into his 60s, volunteered for the Home Guard. And as victory in Europe approached, Monica was an artillery officer stationed at the Thames Estuary. The big news of German surrender brought a chance to celebrate with some of the Americans she had gotten to know.
Yeah, we had this large complex of hospitals, which I think I told you my father was liaison officer, and they're only a mile away up on the moors. And so, yes, I was invited up there many times, and my family too, but I particularly being in the services. They invited me up for the celebrations.
Again, I know you've said that you weren't overly emotional, but after all those years of war, to know the war is over, can you help us understand what that felt like to have that knowledge?
A different person. My brother was a different person. You can't go through all of that and be the same. He and I both were very restless. We couldn't sort of settle to anything for quite a while. I would take off and maybe go to Scotland or somewhere, hitchhike my way through, because there was still a lot of Americans there with their trucks and things. They'd always give you rides. You're a different person. Yeah, I'd never be the same again.
And you mentioned your brother. So when did your family finally know that he was okay and get to see him again?
Well, he didn't come home for 3 years, but after 6 months, they got the notification that he was alive in a prison camp. It was absolutely amazing what he went through, both good and bad.
And is there something in reading his story, in hearing him talk about it, in understanding what he went through, is there an element of his experience that really strikes you, that you say, boy, I can't imagine dealing with that?
There were so many things that happened to him. He was taken in the desert, as I told you, by Rommel's army. After they were overrun, he walked for 3 days in the desert without food or water. He was half dead when the Black Tent Arabs found him, and they took him back to their tents, and he was with them till he recovered. And then he set off again trying to reach the British army, which was coming in, I think, at the foot of Italy. They came in at Salerno. He worked his way down by helping farmers and people. He said all the Italian people were so friendly to him and helped him. And he was with one farmer hiding because the Germans were quite near. And he had a pact with the farmer that if the Germans came, that he would go under a water wheel. They had these big water wheels, and he was going to go under the water wheel. And the Germans came, and he didn't have time. They heard there was a British doctor in the area, and they came looking specifically for him. He didn't have time to get under the water wheel. So, you know, these huge chimneys they had in Italy. He climbed up the chimney inside. He said they ransacked the place, and they were just leaving when one of the Germans came, stuck his bayonet up the chimney, and he had to come down. So, of course, they took him. They blew up the farmer's home, and it didn't kill anyone, which was unusual. And after the war, my brother Derek got a ride with RAF, one of the RAF planes, on one of the planes. And they took him back. I think they were doing training or something. So they took him back to the farm, the RAF guys, as he walked down the lane to where the farm had been. Here came the old farmer. The British they paid him a lot of money, and he'd built a new farm. He was a prosperous farmer by then, and he rushed and embraced Derek, and they were both so happy to see each other. And Derek said, "What can I do for you? What can I give you?" And he said, "I'd like your gold watch," which a patient had given him. So Derek took it off and gave him that, gave him his watch. That was another nice thing that happened. So they had reimbursed him for everything.
For you, when you think about your time in the Army, is there a part of it that in your memories was the most challenging or the most difficult for you, maybe the most taxing?
Probably. When I first went in, I went to just basic training in New York, and just being with all these people that I'd never been with those sort of people. Well, now, of course, there's none of that at all, but I just never lived that kind of life. You know, some were rough and swearing and rough and tough, and I'd just never been used to it. So that was pretty hard for me to begin with, to get used to that.
When you think back on it, is there something that you're most proud of with regard to your service that you look back on and say, yeah, you know, I did something significant there?
I don't think so. And people keep saying, oh, you know, it was so wonderful, you did this, did that. I'm no different from anybody else. I never thought of myself as special, and I'm not. I'm just the same as thousands of others, except I came back with my arms and legs and things. Look at Bill, what he went through, and all these people. After they didn't need anti-aircraft anymore, we were broken up, of course, and sent to different regiments, and I went to a sapper regiment, like bomb disposal and so on. And I was with all these guys, maybe with one leg and no arms. They were the heroes, really, what they went through.
Well, and you just showed me some pictures from just a few years ago here in the States, where the British Paralympic volleyball team faced the American Paralympic volleyball team. And some of those are veterans who've lost limbs in war. Yeah. And even Prince Harry was there with those guys, and you got to meet Prince Harry. What was that like?
I was surprised. I thought he'd be much more standoffish, and he was just the same as anybody else, same as we are. And as I say, he just knelt down beside me on the ground, and so that he was at eye level. I was very, very pleasantly surprised, and it did change my view of him. I had rather despised him because of the humiliation he'd brought on the Queen by his antics. You know, he played strip poker in America and things that the royal family had never, ever done. I kind of changed my opinion of him. He was just a regular guy. And that was Harry, you know, that's how he was.
And his grandmother just celebrated a birthday. She just turned 98. But you had a birthday a few months ago, number 104. And yet people are listening to you talk, and your memory is crystal clear, and every thought is coherent. And most people don't live to 104, let alone retain their faculties. So I've got to...
I can remember clearly, you know, growing up and that sort of thing, and things I did during life. But if you ask me what I did 2 days ago, I couldn't remember.
Well, but I have to ask you. I'm not doing my job if I don't ask you. What's your secret? How have you maintained such vitality and mental acuity at age 104?
I had a good answer for that, and I've forgotten what it was now. So my son says, do everything in moderation. And We were brought up on a healthy life. We were encouraged to walk. When I was only a kid, I'd walk 10 miles maybe with my dogs just for enjoyment. I had nothing else to do. I've always tried to stay healthy. I've never been into anything like heavy drinking or drugs or anything at all. We were brought up all on homegrown food, which I honestly think made a difference. We grew our own vegetables, our own fruit, ate healthy. I don't know. It's not of my choosing, I will tell you. It really wasn't. I think if I died at 95 after 100, I really plummeted.
Well, I've met a lot of centenarians, but very few who can tell a story the way you've told today. And I'm glad you didn't call it quits at 95, because then I would have missed out. I don't know if this is an easy question or not, because this is a lot to take stock of. But if you reflect back over the 104 plus years you've been on this planet, is there something that you would say you're most thankful for?
Thankful we won the war. I'm most thankful for having a united, wonderful family, both now and growing up. One thing I will say, America is not the same as when I first came over all those years ago.
What's the biggest difference that you see?
The dissolution, if one can call it that, of the family, which I think has a great deal to do with America kind of going downhill. I feel we're too far left, going socialist, going possibly communist eventually. Things were much more orderly when I was growing up. You knew where you were, what your place was, what you were supposed to do. Everything was much more orderly. Now anything goes. It's just not the same.
Well, I only have one more thing to say. I need to say thank you. Thank you for your service to the cause in winning World War II, and thank you for telling us a story that nobody else could tell us.
Thank you for listening to me.
What a privilege, what a pleasure, and what a Mother's Day weekend treat to meet Dr. Monica Kinnaman, 104 years young. Don't forget to check out those photos and a short video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. That is all the time we have on the radio today, but thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.